Thank you for your presentation, Elisabeth Gaillard from Colas. I'm wondering how can you do your job, I would say, with 96 people wanting to remain, but being, in charge from the Queen Elizabeth to apply the rules. So how do you do that without being schizophrenic?
It's a challenge, but I must say that the big change since June was last week's announcement, when after the draft guidelines from the EU27 and the European Commission were announced, the big shock here, despite what you read in the headlines, wasn't Spain's reaction. Everyone here knows what Spain's position is towards Gibraltar. That's not news. That has been unwavering and very consistent. The big surprise and shock of people in Gibraltar was the position of the European Commission. And when you have 96% of the people here 9 months ago voting with their hearts and their minds to remain a part of the EU, it's for a good reason. They know how important and how good the EU has been for them. But the announcement last week has come like a massive slap in the face to the people of Gibraltar. And what it says to the people here, and the general reaction around town, is the attitude of the Eurocrats in Brussels look at the citizens of Gibraltar as being insignificant, not important, they don't count. And the view here is that if that is how the supporters of the EU project are going to be treated, it doesn't bode well for the future of the EU. And if the referendum that we had in June last year was held today, I don't think you get 96% voting against, but I certainly don't think you get 96% voting for. That's the big change, the big change. And the real fear is that with the EU's backing to pursue an issue of joint sovereignty by Spain, we're in for a very, very hard time. Another question?
Just to make it very clear, what you would have expected from the Commission?
Even-handedness. We would have expected even-handedness. From, look, if you go back to the setting up of the EU project in the first place, the Treaty of Rome, the Four Freedoms, why it was set up. It was basically set up to stop this continent tearing each other apart, turning your swords into plowshares, you know, putting the people to productive endeavors, creating employment, fostering good neighborliness. Now, on all those metrics, Gibraltar's done a pretty good job. We've created a lot of jobs, not just for Gibraltarians, but for people across the way, and for other EU nationals who have come to settle in this part of the world with their families. We've created economic development, we've fostered cross-border cooperation. You know, we don't think we're doing anything wrong. And this has come as a huge, huge kick in the teeth to the people of Gibraltar. That's the sentiment.
Xavier Auclair from EDF, Electricité de France. I'd like to know what is your position with the double effect of Brexit and the national Moroccan strategy for the North area development, if you intend to develop relations, economic relations, with Morocco more now than with Spain?
It's not just intentions, it's already happened. Understand, this is a trading community, and as any trader will know, if one market dries up because of regulation or because demand falls away, a trader will go out and find another new market. But in Gibraltar, it's much, much more intense than that. If one market closes, they will go out and find four, five more markets. And there was a trade delegation to Morocco visiting Marrakesh, Rabat, Casablanca, and Tangier in November last year. It's not the first time it's happened, but those are going to be kicking in much more frequently. And if we are, and it looks as though we will be, excluded from being able to participate in the single European market in 2 years' time, although by all accounts it might happen sooner, despite the rules, the businesses in this town will go out and find other markets and other people and other countries to trade with. Now that might be in Africa, it might be in the Far East, it might be in Latin America, but these people are not about to hang out their gloves and surrender and wave the white flag. They will go out and make a bigger success. As I said, this town has known adversity on many occasions in the past, but the other perspective is that the opportunities that exist now are much, much greater than the opportunities which existed 50 years ago, or 60 years ago when the frontier closed. And if you want a concrete example of how Gibraltar has turned those opportunities to its advantage, look at the online gaming industry. Now, whether you agree with online gaming industry or you don't agree or you don't have a view, it doesn't really matter. But if you had said to somebody 17 years ago in this town or anywhere, do you know, in 17 years' time, you're going to have about 3,500 people employed in that industry. Most people here would have said, what's online gaming? And if people who did know what online gaming knew what it was, they would have said, 3,500, you're nuts. But it's happened. And it's happened because the regulator and the government have worked with the industry practitioners to attract the best of breed, the best operators to come and work here. It's a highly regulated and highly regarded online gaming jurisdiction. We don't have many gaming companies, I think there are 30 in total, but they employ 3,500 people. And because it's such a fast-moving business, we have the three components of regulator, industry, and government have worked together to create the environment and the infrastructure that makes sure that we can grow together. And if we've done it with that, we'll do it with others. And what the internet gives a place like Gibraltar is scale and capacity to roll out that in great speed. So we're not complacent. We're quite confident that other opportunities will exist, but there are going to be significant challenges.
So you're confident for the Magali Castex from Great Paris project, urban project. So you're confident about finding other markets, trading markets, and what about the workforce? People coming from Spain to work in here?
That is the challenge. One of the studies that we have prepared for government, we've got the UK government and so forth, when we were doing sort of like a risk analysis post the June referendum, was, you know, where are the pressure points? And it doesn't really matter what business you're in, whether you're selling financial services, whether you're selling automobiles, real estate, whether you've got a restaurant downtown, whether you're a tour operator, taking people up the rock. Everything revolves around the frontier. Directly or indirectly, every business here will be affected by the frontier. Either because you'll import physical product, everything you see, your chair you're sitting on, this table, everything here has been imported, and probably across the frontier rather than by sea. You're bringing in supplies for supermarkets or whatever, everything is imported. If you're not selling physical goods, but you employ somebody, chances are they'll live, or one of your members of staff will live in Spain. So everything revolves around the frontier. That's why we think it's absolutely critical that the frontier remains as fluid as possible. We see, not just the Chamber, but Gibraltar itself, sees no reason that just because we leave the EU, we see no reason that the 12,000, 13,000 people who cross that frontier every day to come to work should be forced to lose their job. And if the EU turns around and says, sorry, you're out of the club, no jobs, guys, that would be a terrible thing to inflict on a community here. Not just on the moral grounds, but because it goes to the very heart of why the EU was set up, you know, to create employment, create wealth, foster cross-border relations. But if the people in Brussels are going to turn around and say, no, we don't want that, it would be terrible. I think the founding fathers of the EU would be turning in their graves.
Sorry for this very naive question, but what is
What is still at stake for the United Kingdom to remain in Gibraltar today?
What? Why don't they share sovereignty all the time? Okay. There are two points to that. The easy point is the strategy argument. So if you go back to, again, that second or third slide, where we saw the satellite photo, Gibraltar's place in the world. Although the military presence here has become so insignificant because of successive defence cuts, it could be ramped up very quickly. What Gibraltar gives the UK is an ability to project power 1,200 miles south of the UK. The only alternative is to have a battle fleet, like the US model. So you have aircraft carriers and all the support ships and so forth. Costing that is a hell of a lot more than the £55 or £60 million a year it costs to have a scaled down military base. But within that, we have the port, we have the airport, and supplies and things can be brought in at very, very short notice. 35 years ago, I know it was referred to earlier this week by the ex-leader of the UK Tory party, when the Falkland Islands crisis kicked off, a lot of the ships which sailed from the UK in Portsmouth sailed at very, very short notice, unprepared. And in those days before the internet and so forth, the view of the UK media was that it was only a small task force, five or six ships and so forth. By the time the task force had reached the South Atlantic, there was a flotilla of about 45, 50 ships. And a lot of them had been refitted or called in to Gibraltar on the way to pick up supplies which had been flown out by the RAF. So it gives you a forward mounting base, just as Cyprus and the Eastern Mediterranean does. So that's the easy bit. Strategically, why would the UK give it up? Well, I'm sure there are some people in the Foreign Office, in the UK Foreign Office, who would love nothing better. Nothing better than to get rid of this place. But this place is as British as Dover, as Telford, Peterborough, Newcastle. The fact is that they're 1,200 miles away from the British mainland. It's neither here nor there, but they are British subjects. So why should the sovereignty change? They've been British for 300 plus years, longer than they were ever Spanish. And under the Woodrow Wilson theory about self-determination, not about Spanish, or not about territorial integrity, which is the Spanish argument. Self-determination or the who rules you should be determined by the people who are being ruled. That's the basic British position, and it's a position that people in Gibraltar tend to agree with. That's it in a nutshell. Yeah. It should be down to the will of the people of Gibraltar. The Spanish position currently, though, is that the future of Gibraltar has nothing to do with the Gibraltarian people. We don't see that as very democratic. Next question. That's a wrap. One more.
Last one.
Very nice.
Or maybe
two.
Not a very strategic question, but I was quite surprised when you showed us that 80% of the population is Roman Catholic. So I just don't understand.
It's Latin culture. Look at Spain. Look at Italy. Southern Mediterranean.
But your population is mainly British.
It's British, but your cultural influences are Latin. Very strong Latin. We speak English, we also speak Spanish, and other languages too, but the influence is definitely Latin.
It's impressive. It's surprising, but it's not a strategic question.
No,
I'm
no,
just
no.
Wondering.
It's a good one. What I should also say is that a lot of it is non-practicing. As I said, it's fairly secular. So you'll see them, if you come here in two or three weeks' time, down the main square, on a Saturday, on a Friday and a Saturday, it'll be full of young kids, mini meringues, who've just had their first communion, and they'll have a big party and so forth. Then a month later, their older brothers and sisters will have their confirmation. And it's a really big occasion for the families. Everyone gets dressed up. It's a big, big occasion. But you won't see them in church the following Sunday. You won't see them in church probably until Christmas. And then you'll have Easter, and then that'll be it. Most of the people who are confirmed and receive their first communion, they won't go to church on a regular basis. Yeah. This last one?
Thank you.
Do you want a mic?
In France, we are used to have a country close to us, which is not a part of the EU, and I think about Switzerland. And with a lot of people crossing the border daily for the same reason. So I don't really understand why the situation, the coming situation, should be different for you than it is for us.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, and we're like that. We hope, because if you look at, for example, the case of Switzerland and Ticino and Lugano, one-fifth of Ticino's workforce in Switzerland is made up of Italian workers, and they cross the border every single day. Now, we hope that still can be maintained. We see no reason for that. But Switzerland, as you know, has had a huge problem in its relations with the EU in terms of putting a cap on the number of people coming in, either to live or immigrants or whatever. And even though they had an agreement with the EU, some of the cantons in Switzerland, I can't remember which ones, decided to put a cap in, and the EU have had a big bust up, and it still hasn't been resolved. Thank you very much for your attention.